It's The Bill Murphy Show. A daily one-on-one 30-minute interview featuring people from all walks of life. Available daily at BillMurphyShow.com. And now, here's your host, Bill Murphy.
And this is your digital broadcast for Thursday, August 19th, 2010. Brought to you by Lulu's Bait Shack. Fresh Florida seafood, gigantic fishbowl, drinks, and live rock and roll. In Beach Place on A1A in the heart of Fort Lauderdale Beach. So we bring you today on the show, in a timely fashion, one of the stars of tonight's edition of Burn Notice. I want to apologize to Michael Jacques because we actually did 7 minutes of this interview and had to roll again because of some technical difficulties with the telephone connection. So since he's an actor, we're going to make him go through it again. And Mike, we're going to do the whole first 5 minutes over again. You cool with that?
Absolutely. Take two.
You're the man. Okay, now what did I say first? Let's see. No, I actually have we were doing sort of like an audio inside the actor studio today because you, my friend, and we'll get into how it all led up to this when we get into your history, but you've secured a spot on tonight's episode of Burn Notice. Burn Notice, one of the hottest shows in the country, and you're playing Colonel who tonight?
Colonel Russell.
Colonel Russell. Wow, that's exciting stuff, man. So what is Colonel Russell supposed to be doing tonight?
Colonel Russell is an operative, a military background, and he's searching for a document on the show called The Bible, which is some sort of a document that contains all sorts of secret Burn Notice stuff.
Okay.
And, and he goes out there, and he gets to try to find it, and of course he gets caught, and that's when the fun begins.
Okay.
Without giving away too much, I'll just leave it at that.
Now, what I find interesting is we were talking off the air before our first take of this interview, and you were telling me that, as is always the case, there's still an air of mystery around how much, if any, of your part will get into the show now. But you did tell me it's a co-host part, so you would imagine, I mean, at least some of Colonel Russell's going to be in there for sure, right?
You would hope. Again, I'll preface, but you never know.
Okay.
I mean, you can shoot scenes, and they can end up on what we call the cutting room floor. Or you may do a take or something in a film, and you may say, wow, that take was money. And next thing you know, you go back and you see the film, or you see the dailies, and you go, I can't believe they used the worst one. So you never know what they're going to choose.
Yeah, but from what you told me, isn't co-host mean that it's an important enough role that they would literally be changing the story if they took him out?
Well, yes, true. When you're co-starring, you never know what's going to happen. Within the script, I also have, within the show, they call it like a splash screen, where they'll freeze frame on my character, they'll splash screen up who I am, and then it's a freeze, boom, splash screen, and then they carry on with the show.
Ah, so, I guess to shorten the establishing the character, and then they just get on with it to cut
right.
out. Yeah, I got
it. He's pretty much integrated into some nice scenes in there, so, you know. And another good thing, Bill, is that they don't kill me, you see?
So you don't...
So there's always a chance that Colonel Russell will come back because he was not killed.
Okay.
Keep that in mind.
All right, well, now it sounds like you're giving too much away now.
You know what? You're right. Maybe they did kill Colonel Russell.
I'll cut that last minute out. So Michael is an actor that's made the move into acting over the... Let's trace our steps a little bit, and let's start... I won't make you go back all the way to your childhood, but we'll...
From the beginning.
Let's start in the my dad's old office in Taft Street in Hollywood when you were rehearsing with Fig.
With all those great t-shirts, man.
That's right, I forgot. That's right. You can tell the story because it's just as amusing to me to hear it again.
Oh, man. Well, we used to practice with Figment.
Yep.
A great rock and roll band.
And my dad had a t-shirt company.
We used to rehearse at the t-shirt company. it was great insulation, man. All those great t-shirts.
That's right. Know? The sound was awesome in there because we had all those baffles with the boxes of t-shirts. Oh, it was great stuff, man. And
we never even bothered to look into the boxes and take t-shirts for ourselves. That's how good we were.
We were really good kids. We didn't steal any shirts.
We could have.
Totally.
Buying the whole school, man.
Hey, look, Mike's here with a bunch of t-shirts again.
Give me your lunch money.
I have a fond memory of us playing at the Treehouse Lounge, and every time I run into Janet... Remember, do you remember Janet?
City of the Angels.
Do you remember Janet Elder, right?
Yes, I do.
Every time I run into her, she reminds me of you and me and my brother and Mark playing at the treehouse, and the fact that Steve was barefoot and I had sneakers with no socks on. And she she'll never forget that.
May I add to that? Do you remember City of the Angels?
Yes, I do.
You try to block it out.
It's gone, and now you just brought it back, and it's going to haunt me. Because we did the song. Okay, now what people are not understanding is we're talking very inside now. We performed that Journey song. What is it? Loving, Touching, Squeezing, right?
No, City. Yeah.
And then it goes right into another song called City of the Angels, and we had the balls to try to do that song with the four-part harmony.
A cappella with no key center. We did not know the key, because it modulates, I think, to the key of C.
Right.
So here we are trying to sing like blank, and everybody was doing their own thing, and veritable train wreck.
A complete train wreck. But I remember playing REO Speedwagon, Roll with the Changes.
I remember, Bill, it was so bad that the ghost of Elvis came up and bitch slapped me that night.
I think he did. That's absolutely
right. That's how bad it was.
That's a good line, Mike. I like that one.
I made that up just now.
Just now? That's how sharp you are. So, Michael Jacques, you were born in, you're one of those rare people at our age, or close to my age, that was born in Fort Lauderdale, or South Florida, at least, right?
That's right. Born in Margate, Florida.
Margate, okay. You're officially the first person I've ever known that's been born in Margate.
I know, probably the only person born in Margate. You know, there's probably a plaque somewhere for me downtown.
And you went to high school where, Cooper City?
Cooper City.
Okay.
That's right.
I remembered that.
Cooper City High School. After Cooper City, I went, tried a stint in college, and then played in numerous rock and roll bands. Played in a band with Ricky Sanders, who now plays for Bad Company.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
What were some of the other bands in South Florida that you played with that people would remember?
I played in a band called In the Pink.
Oh, yeah.
With Mark and me and Sonny, Jared Herstick, and I think that was it. That was a pretty cool little blues rock band.
Yep.
I played with Serge DiLorenzo and Mike Burns. Serge was from Victim. You remember those guys?
Of course.
Various jams. But, you know, then I ended up moving out to L.A. shortly thereafter, and
right.
That's how I got into the business of acting.
So what was the trip to L.A. originally to chase a music dream?
And you didn't
have acting on your mind at the time?
None.
Okay,
chased
cool.
Chased a music dream, moved out there. I remember I was rooming up with some guys, and one of the guys was in a band with an actor. And he came in looking for the guys, and, of course, they weren't there, and I was hanging out. And he said, hey, I need somebody to come with me on an audition to play a guitar player. I was like, all right, I guess I can do that.
Yeah.
Went down and booked the gig. It was a national commercial. My first audition, I booked a national TV commercial.
Oh, there's so many actors that want to kill you for saying that.
I know. Right now they're going to be hunting me down.
Oh, that's just, but it's awful, but it's fantastic, man. Good for you.
And then it just sort of one thing went to the next, and, you know, it's been a fun ride.
So have you been able to make acting your full-time gig, or have you always had to do other stuff at the same time most do?
Yes, I'm always working on the side. You know, I'm doing that. Of course, you know, I teach guitar and all
Oh,
that,
yeah. Well, so. If you've always had the ability to teach guitar, so that's always something you could do at the same time as you're doing whatever else you're doing, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, ironically, it's a little side thing. A bunch of students that I have that are now, you know, in their, say, 20s, are really, really good guitar players. And it's sort of a nice personal feather in my cap. It makes me feel really good when I see these young players out there just tearing it up.
I was working with a young band in my studio about a year ago, I think, and forgive me for not remembering who it was, and they said, my guitar teacher taught us that song. And I said, who's your guitar teacher? And they said, Michael Jacques. I can't remember who it was now.
Life Suicide with...
No.
I think that's... Okay. Maybe it was Night Ride or...
No,
these bands.
No. You know what? I should have had the name in front of me, and I feel embarrassed that I don't remember what this band's name was. But they were recording here in my studio, and I guess he was playing a riff of an old classic rock song. And I said, "You're too young to know that song." And he goes, "Well, my guitar teacher taught me that," and I got a little a kick out of that. So
you have to, man. You have to teach them the classics.
It's fantastic.
Get away with it.
So teaching guitar, now you said that some of the guys are really great guitar players. So what is the difference now with the way kids are playing these days to when you learned how to play guitar? What's the difference in the dynamics? And is the talent really I mean, is it really there? Are you seeing it just like it was? Are guitar players getting better or not? That, I guess, is what I'm asking.
I think that, you know, that's a great question. I'm going to answer it biased. I think that the guys that I have taught, I made a special point to really, really put my philosophy of playing into what they do.
Nice.
And because they were young and open to learn, I taught them the way that I would play things. And now they couple that with the modern way of listening and approaching things, and I think you got some great guitar players. You got a couple guys out there, a guy named Nick Gilbey, Silvio Vega.
Silvio Vega is the guy that came and recorded here.
Right.
With his
these
band.
Some of these young players, you know, Lucas Sader, guys like that, you know, are placing into the King of the Blues contest and all that. And I can actually, they attribute all of it to me, which is really nice, and that's what makes it really worthy, you know?
But yeah, I guess you made a good point in that some of the modern music that's been out since they're growing up has kind of changed their style of what they're playing, but they're using your style, which creates a whole new style.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Very, very cool, man. Now, it must be neat to see somebody learn a style or a riff or a pattern that you came up with and then see them play it well. It must be a pretty rewarding feeling.
It's very cool. It's very cool when I see these guys outside of me. Say, for example, I got a guy named Nick Yobay up in Boston right now. He plays in a band called Huck Finn.
Okay.
And, you know, just getting accolades and good press and just people just gushing over the way this guy plays. And just to see that mark, you know, he just talked to me, called me the other day, and, you know, again, these guys are just so appreciative of what we've done together, you know, in terms of playing and learning how to play.
So
it's just been a great thing.
So you still enjoy it, then? It's not just a job teaching guitar. You take a lot of pride in it and look the kid over and figure out what you can do and go the whole route with him.
Absolutely. My goal when I'm teaching these guys is to make them just great guitar players that can go and carry the torch, you know, like we all did.
Is it too late to teach me? Yes, Bill, you can't teach an old dog new tricks.
But we can get you in the films.
I just never had the ability, man. And I'm telling you, it's things like guitar playing with me that make me believe that there's just a certain degree, a certain percentage of your talent is just in your DNA and you're born with it. And there's just nothing you can do about it if you don't have that.
Perhaps. You know, I can attribute that same thing to sort of like acting. I mean,
yes.
You know, I study and I read. I've just finished another book, but a book that I recommend for any actors listening out there now is a book by Larry Moss called Intent to Live. Am I able to mention that?
Sure you are.
Okay. Fantastic book, Stanislavski Meisner. It's a great book. I study. I still take workshops and, again, you know, And as a matter of fact, I even do the dreaded student film on occasion. If I come across a good script that's of the student capacity, I'll do a student film. It's like a free acting.
You're not going to get me to laugh at that. I'm all about doing the independent things and doing stuff that makes you good at what you're doing. I mean, and that's really all you're doing there, you know. That, Mike, this half the reason I did this show was to, you know, try to get good at interviewing again, you know, or, you know, learn how to get better at it. So
and the show, I think that any time you do something for the essence of why you do it, you know, is the only reason to do it, and that is the only way you're going to become successful. And you and I both know that.
Exactly.
You know, I always tell people, they say, oh, you know, Burn Notice, or you've done this movie, or that, or other, you know, and I tell them, if you're in this business to make money, you're in the wrong business.
Exactly.
You know, and it's so true.
That's why all of us chose radio when we did, too, for the same reason. We weren't in it for the money. We did it because we loved being on the radio.
Yep. And I think it's great, you know, with podcasting and the internet now that, you know, a talent and like you can go back out and do what you do, man, you know, and turn people on to that whole thing again, which is great.
Yeah, thanks, man. I really appreciate that. And I think if it wasn't for technology, people like you and I wouldn't be hooking back up again because, of course, Facebook is... Let's face
Very
it, this is the main way I got this thing off the ground. I hope to expand out of the Facebook realm, but for now, it's really making it grow and getting in touch with a lot of people. We couldn't do that 20 years ago, dude. We had to get on a payphone and call each other, remember?
Exactly. Exactly. It's a great concept. It's a great show, man.
Oh, really. Thanks. Well, I wasn't really talking about the show. I was just talking about technology in general. I just think it's amazing that we've come as far as we have. And I guess that the message I'm trying to get out, it's on my mission statement, I guess, whatever you call it, on the webpage, is that people, if you've got something that you really want to do, now's your ability to do it. Now everything's out there. It's technologically, everything's ready for you to do whatever you want to do, whether it's broadcast or write. You can just get it in the hands of whoever you want, you know?
Totally the truth. You know, and if I could go back to student films for a minute.
I love that. Project, I love that. I love that subject.
Or indie films, even. You know, again, to me, I will do any of these projects, regardless of their budget, if it's a quality project, if it's done well. And, for example, I shot a student film a year and a half ago by a writer-director by the name of Michael Chase, an extremely talented guy, older student director, and saw the breakdown on Actors Info, which is this local website that lists breakdowns for all the acting and stuff, actorsinfobooth.com.
Okay.
I said, wow, I really want to do this. Went down and auditioned at the film school, and, of course, I broke the lead. This thing's been burning it up. You know, he's in the Rough Cut Film Festival now. He just won Best Screenplay at the Palm Beach Film Festival. And this thing, it's a student film, and yet it's a calling card. It's getting me all kinds of good exposure. He talked to somebody on the West Coast out in L.A., and they said, you should turn this into a feature. Well,
wow. There
you go. So if there's any, you know, with your audience members now that are actors or up-and-coming or want to get into it, never turn your nose up at indie projects or even student films. Because I'd like to say, at one time, even Steven Spielberg was a student filmmaker.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course he was.
Exactly.
Well, you know, and I just think the accessibility now of being able to do anything you want, get it out there and in the hands of people, we'll go back to the cream rising to the top. You know what I mean? It's like things aren't going to get contracted and signed on for the wrong reasons anymore. They'll be done because they're good, and people will find out that they're good, and you'll get instant recognition of something if it's good or not, you know?
Very, very true, man.
And it's going to be an interesting world because everybody can speak up now, and who knows how powerful everybody being able to speak up is going to be 5 years from now. I personally think it's very, very encouraging to think that, you know, any number of people can have any number of voices they want instantaneously, and that's gonna increase exponentially in the next 5 years. Okay, that's the
amazing what's happening. You know, I wanted to also mention about what you said about, you know, when you follow your passion, your mission statement, when you do these things, by virtue of that purity in your thought, other things will occur.
Yeah, absolutely, you know? Absolutely.
And it's just, it's a very, very good thing. And again, I will say to your listeners that, you know, whatever it is that they feel passionately about,
uh-huh,
follow it and believe in it and be pure about it, and the good things come. You know, let me reflect it back to the Burn Notice tonight.
Michael Jacques and Bill Murphy, making life better for everyone.
One day at a time.
One listener and one day at a time. Go back to the Burn Notice thing, though. What were you going to say?
For example, you know, going up on that set, and I actually want to tell you a funny story about that tonight. I think it's a great story. But before I preface that, let me say this much. If you're doing independent films, if you're doing student things, if you're doing workshops as the actor, up and coming, whatever, when the opportunity presents itself, you're ready. And as Robert Evarts, you know, said, is luck is when opportunity meets preparedness. So
yep.
When you do all this stuff, if you're doing radio, if you're doing film, music, whatever it is you're doing, when the opportunity presents itself, and it will, you're ready.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, yeah. Oh, uh-huh. I know. Exactly. I know exactly what you're talking about. You're preaching to the choir, my friend. Now that you're in the film business, I want to exploit something from you. And most of this we're going to have to talk about off the air at another time. But I've watched personally, Mike, I've watched about 200 documentaries in the last 3 years, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really, really, really on the documentary kick. I think it's the greatest genre of movie. I just think it speaks the most for the people out there, and it's a great vehicle for people to get their message across. Now, I have in my head something I've been developing for about 2 years on a fantastic premise for a documentary, and I've only pitched it to like two or three peers in the industry, and all three times it went over like, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to do this. So I'm thinking about a year from now I'm going to do that, and I'd love to get you on board in any number of roles, my brother.
Oh, I would love to, man.
Yeah, I think you'll love the idea. I'm not going to pitch it on the air now because somebody will steal it, but I want it.
Yes, exactly.
Because I don't know if you're, I don't know if I'm getting into a genre here that you're not really as into as I am, but the documentaries have just blown my mind. Are you familiar with the documentary called The Bridge, about the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco?
No, but I just watched, yesterday, we watched Food, Inc.
Oh, awesome. It was great.
And if you've seen Bigger, Stronger, Faster.
Saw it. Yep.
Great one. The King of Kong was a really good one.
Saw it. I'm 4 for 4 already. I know. I've seen them all,
so
bro.
I'm big on them, too. I definitely, you know, I love the documentaries. Absolutely.
So is directing or helping co-directing or something like that in the future something you'd consider?
It's ironic you should mention that. One of my goals for this coming year is I want to produce and, of course, act in a film that I'm going to try and put together.
Oh, excellent. That's fantastic. So you're writing stuff, too?
Actually, I have written scripts, but this one is based on the works of another author. I read her book maybe 15 years ago, and I was like, wow, this has to be made into a movie.
Yeah.
So we've been in discussion on that, and I've got the script, and, you know, I'm trying to get the funding and stuff, and hopefully by the end of this, say, the end of 2011, it's going to be done.
Okay, so Michael, let's talk about this auditioning process that's involved in your business, because I kind of stepped into it a little bit. I had the headshots done. I registered with a couple of talent agencies down here and started running around to those auditions. And it is just, if you don't mind, this is my take on it, and I want to see how much you agree with this. After going on about a half a dozen or maybe 10 auditions or so for little things, commercials, little bit parts in commercials, even non-speaking things, I realized after I'd done maybe, okay, let's take the first 4 that I did, or just take any 4. I probably did okay on 2 of them and terrible on the other 2. And it just occurred to me that the law of averages says, okay, if I'm only going to do decent on half of them, I'm going to have to go. The odds of me being actually selected for one of these is so, you know, few and far between. I'm going to have to go on 400 auditions to get 2 or 3 jobs. And it just seemed like an overwhelming law of averages to me. What do you think?
It is. It's a very hard gig. You got to walk out there. You got to pancake your face right out there.
And where do you find the time? I mean, it's in between all the things you're doing. You're taking a lunch break and running over to the agency to do a quick audition, right?
Yeah, you've got to try to set them up, and you got to hustle in there when you can. Most of these auditions, as you know, literally take minutes. You know, you walk in.
Hopefully.
You stand on an X on the floor, which they call a slate mark.
Right.
You say your name, you turn left, you turn right. If you got some dialogue, 2 or 3 lines, and thanks. See you later, and you're out the door. Literally, maybe a minute and a half, 2 minutes. And yeah, the law of averages are, it's a very strange thing. I've been fortunate because I've been very, very marketable, which goes into a whole other story.
Well, and you've had, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but and you've had the success, you have the track record, so you're going to beat out a newcomer like me that's in that waiting room, who, by the way, because my experience has been I've sat there for 20, 30 minutes waiting to get in a few times, too. So sometimes you're bypassing that long wait, are you not?
Yeah, it does.
Okay, okay. The truth comes out. That's all I'm just saying.
And obviously if they know, well, this guy, he can book, he's marketable, we can make our commissions and profits off of him. Obviously, they're going to go with a proven commodity.
Right.
But again, to the newbie sitting out there, he or she has got to continue to go through that process. There's no getting around it.
Yeah.
And you will get your break if you stick long enough. I'll tell you a quick story about this Burn Notice episode. I went and read for the guy named Ray.
Okay.
Who's a part on the show tonight also.
Okay.
I went in, I got a call back. That's when they like you from the casting office. They send you back to meet the directors and the writers, and then you re-audition again in front of them.
Okay.
That's what we call a callback. So I went to the callback. And I didn't really hit it, Bill. You know, I was like, it was kind of sad, it was whatever. As I was walking out the door, the casting director, she came out. She said, hey, Michael, wait, the director wants you to read for the part of Colonel Russell.
Oh,
like
I love it.
That?
Love it.
And I was like, yeah, sure. You know, now the bad side of it was, Bill, is there's all these Colonel Russells sitting out in the lobby watching this happen.
Oh, man.
And I'm thinking, yeah. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll do it. And of course, I went in there and, you know, it's money. So
they picked you right on the spot, and you knew walking out that door that those other guys waiting didn't get it?
I knew it. I knew it was a done
See?
Deal.
Wow, painful.
The director looked at me right in the audition. He looked at me and said, that was perfect. That's exactly what we want. I knew it right there.
Nice. Oh, that's very cool. Very cool. Yeah. But so sobering, you know, to know that that stuff goes on when you're in that waiting room, you know?
Yeah. You know, sometimes I've been the guy in the waiting room on the other foot, too. You know, you go, oh, that son of a gun, he nailed it, you know?
And I guess the bottom line is what I was trying to say, and I think what you're you know, kind of backing up here is that it does take that many tries, and the truth of the matter is 10 or 20 failures will kill most people. I mean, they'll give up, right?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. The 10 or 20, 30... You know, I'll tell you something, Bill. You know what I think really gets people more than anything is the callback deny. I have friends of mine who have gotten 5, 10, 15 callbacks.
Oh, yeah.
Never to book a gig.
I actually had a callback where, okay, here's what it was. It was a Florida Lottery had this television campaign last year, maybe 6 months ago, that they were doing a whole series of commercials. And there was this fishing scene where these two guys were sitting on the edge of a dock fishing, and one catches a much bigger fish than the other, and whatever. It had to do with winning a bigger pot in the lottery or something. I don't know what it was. But I got a call back for that. And I went back, and now there was only 4 or 5 of the guys that were there the first time I went. And then I didn't get that call back. And, of course, a couple of weeks later, I'm watching TV, and there's the commercial. And I see the dude that got it, the part that I didn't. You know what I mean?
So, I do know what you mean.
So, I mean, I'll break your heart if that happens 5, 6 times in a row, which I'm sure it happens to people all the time.
It is. And, to give a shout-out to my agent, Cindy Shermer, over at Stellar Talent, if I can shamelessly plug her.
Absolutely. You can plug anything you want here, bro.
There you go, man.
Just don't drop any F-bombs.
No F-bombs, man. No. We exercise the proper vernacular. So... I've got it for, my agent, she'll send me out on all kinds of stuff, and probably 75-80% of it I never hear about, which is good.
Yeah. You don't want to know the bad news.
Right, you think, am I going to get this? Am I going to, they don't like me, they like me, oh, I'm perfect for this. You know, and like you said, you flip on the TV, or you go and you see the guy in the lobby, you go, that guy sucked. How did you get that gig?
Well, I didn't think that, because the guy did good, but, you know.
Oh, I've seen that before. That guy sucked. How did he get that job?
No, I knew that guy was going to get that. He came
better
in
knowing than thinking he sucked, and then he gets.
He came in suspenders with bait hanging from his pockets. You know, so forget.
Oh my God! He had gills. That's how ready he was.
Now, as far as the music goes, other than the teaching, are you getting out and playing? Do you get to jam with people every once in a while, or what?
No, I'm not really doing that, man. I haven't. I work a little bit once in a while, jam with Charlie Pickett. You know Charlie Pickett?
I know the name. I should know.
Kind of an underground cult blues rock guy, you know?
Right.
Very talented, very roots rock kind of stuff. So we jam together once in a while, and... But other than that, no, I'm not really playing, you know.
Did you play with some heavy cats when you were out in California?
I had my own group out there. I got signed to a production deal, and I played with some real good players out there. LA is not as scary as I thought it was going to be.
No, it wasn't, huh?
No. You know, initially you think, coming from Florida something, you think, oh my God, you know, everybody's going to be Steve Lukather.
Yeah,
but,
right.
But they're not, you know. They're not, man. You know, you get out there, you go, oh my God.
Well, everybody wants to be, but they're not.
Yeah, right. They may look like Steve Lukather.
and play his guitar, but that's about it.
Right, and they play the Steve Lukather model guitar, but they really, other than the TC and D chord, they're kind of limited.
Well, that's one definite artist that we have in common as being big fans of right there, for sure. But I always enjoyed watching you play, man. You're a very flamboyant player, and you know that if you ever see that Nobody's Fault is playing somewhere, that the invitation is always open to you, my man.
Oh, I love it. You guys rock, man, no doubt. And Rick is so cool about letting me play his guitar.
Yeah, and can you even play one of those Jacksons? Do you even like playing one of those guitars?
I don't. I can't stand them. I can't. I hate them. Everything about them just screams wrong.
All right, so since you're the music guy, one of the main music guys that, I mean, I've had the most fun, some of the most fun musically with people that I've had with anybody, with you. Well, that sentence didn't make any sense whatsoever, but What are you digging these days? Are you still listening to the old standby collection, or are you branching out and listening to any new stuff? What's hitting you hard?
I have been obsessed with flamenco guitar playing, man.
Cut it out, really?
Straight up, man. I even sit in with dance classes. I sit in with flamenco dance classes.
Oh, come on!
I'm being straight with you, man. I do it. And I'm horrible at it. I suck at flamenco.
Oh, well, that's what makes it fun, because you're learning it, and it's a challenge, though.
It is, and I can fool people enough into thinking that I know what I'm doing.
Right.
But in actuality, no. I just find the flamenco guitar playing is just fascinating.
It is definitely fascinating, and I think that is fascinating that you're trying to do it and taking on that challenge to do it. So next time we hang out, I want to hear you play the nylon strings, man.
I'll do my best to train wreck for you, no problem.
So you don't own a Les Paul anymore?
Oh, I do. Yeah, I still have. I have, what, 16 guitars?
Okay.
That's an insane collection. Hey, if I do flamenco, make sure you have Steve record a rim shot for me. You know?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Hey, cut it out. Hey, come on now.
Anybody here from out of town?
Try the deal. Hey, cut it out.
So really, I thought you were going to turn me on to some cool album that I otherwise wouldn't know about you, because you were always like a music connoisseur, man.
Well, actually, I do listen to a lot. If you listen to Vicente Amico, very, very amazing fingerstyle guitar player. Then there's rock guys, we all love the rock guys, man. If you ever heard of Eric Gales?
Yes, I have.
Unbelievable.
Heard of him, never heard the stuff yet, but I will check it out now that you said it.
Scary guitar.
So you still follow shredders, you still listen to guitar players?
I do.
Okay.
I do. I'm flipping the devil sign right now as we speak, okay, just to...
Still the biggest fan of Tony Iommi as you ever were.
That's right. Fingertips and all.
Right.
Well, so we used to do a cover of Mob Rules, right?
Oh, yes, we did Mob Rules with you. I forgot that was you we did that with. Okay.
That is a great song.
Speaking of Tony Iommi, that's great stuff, man.
So, oh, you gotta love it.
So we go back to that, and we're talking about 1984, 5-ish. That's pretty cool. So that's a long time ago, and there's some great memories there, my friend. Burn Notice is happening tonight on 9 o'clock Eastern on USA Network. Look for Colonel Russell, and that'll be the dude you've been listening to for the last 30 minutes on Bill Murphy Show, man. Mike, thanks for coming on with me, man.
Hey, thank you, Bill. Seriously, and listen, any of your listeners, if you want to hit me up, find me up on Facebook. I'm easy to find.
And I'm going to post link to your Facebook page on there. And then I'll also put a reminder on the page of where people can tune into that. And just for fun, a link to your IMDb page, because it's nice to know somebody that has one of those.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. It'd be my pleasure.
Michael, thanks a lot. Don't be a stranger, man. Let's hang out one of these days.
Absolutely, Bill. Thank you very much.
You are the man. That's Michael Jacques. One more time, we'll remind you, tonight's episode of Burn Notice at 9 o'clock on USA. Check him out on there. And tomorrow, we have Cairo, the band, performing live in the studio and doing the Bill Murphy Show. Check it out. All five guys playing at once right here tomorrow.
Log on each weekday for another edition of the Bill Murphy Show at BillMurphyShow.com. If you'd like to be a guest, send an email to murph@BillMurphyShow.com. That's MURPH@BillMurphyShow.com. A Murphonics Media Production.